Welcome, everybody. I am William Hewitt, and I am broadcasting live from the vast plains of the Free State, somewhere in the old Boer Republic. I'd like to thank Richard for allowing me on again today. I'm very happy to be at Revision Media. And tonight, I have a very interesting show for you.
If you haven't thought the last few shows were interesting enough, well, I think this really ought to get your mind going. Over the years, I've been deconstructing things that have been, that I think are wrong in this world. And I've come to the realization that it's Jews behind just about everything possible that is wrong. They are, by nature, subverters, destroyers, liars, thieves. And they do everything they can to turn us, the Aryan, into them. They pervert everything. They pervert the knowledge that our Aryan ancestors once had. They've perverted the way we've lived, and they've brought us all down to this base, animalistic, worldly way of living. And this is, folks, why many of us are extremely sick. Yeah, we're all sick in one way or another. I mean, I hope there's some out there who are not, but yes, even I have my own issues, and I've been trying to solve the problems of these issues. And I've been doing this by, well, there's several ways. I've been changing the way I eat. I have been trying to become in tune with myself spiritually by knowing who my innermost is, the inner Aryan or the inner God, if you will, within me. And I've come to the conclusion that this is how we bring ourselves back to health. Now, the past few weeks, I talked about straw man and the maritime admiralty law, which we're all enslaved under and in. That's just the beginning, folks. That's just the awareness, understanding that information, that we are indeed all slaves on the Goy plantation. But like I said, these Jews, they have brought us down to even a lower level than just being a slave. They've made us sick. They've made us, or have turned us, into animals. Yeah, some will argue that human beings are animals. Yeah, many of us, the way we act today, are worse than animals, I would say. But my main reason for looking and trying to figure out a better way of life is because of my, well, I don't want to say insecurities, or, but that's a part of it. My own, you know, illnesses, my own habits that make me sicker. You know, I'm really trying to figure out how to live a better way. And the first way I'd like to talk about is through our diet. No, I'm not going to be talking about food and diet the entire show. I only plan on talking about this, you know, at the very opening of the show here. And then I'm going to move on to a much bigger subject, which many do not understand. But when it comes to food, folks, there's a saying, we are what we eat. And someone else I know out there, an old teacher of mine by the name of the Celtic rebel, added on to that phrase and says, you are what you eat and you are what you don't poop out. What's that mean? Well, it means that you can, when you ingest dead flesh, you are able to eliminate the dead flesh you eat. However, what you cannot poop out is the tortured energy that these animals that we eat have accumulated over the, before their death, of being kosherly slaughtered or halal slaughtered. Just the unhealthful environment most of these animals live in their entire life, by not being in the sun, by being in factory farms or, where they never see the light of day. Yes, folks, we are what we do not poop out. We are this tortured energy. And that's not even to mention the hormones and the antibiotics and all the other toxins that are injected into these animals that we ingest. Now, I'm not here to promote a vegan or a vegetarian diet. I'm not here to promote a carnivore diet. You do what's best for you. However, I shall be presenting information which I have found to be best for myself. Because I have, like I said just a minute or two ago, I too have some health issues that I'm trying to deal with. Many of you already know what they might be, but if you don't, I guess I'll explain a little bit. When I was in seventh grade, I was the quarterback for my middle school football team. And I was sacked, hit by a defender. And after that hit, I was never the same. I have a lot of lower back pain, which causes my sciatic nerve to, the older I get, the more chronic it becomes. It basically never goes away. It's very difficult for me to sit. It's very difficult for me to lie down. And while diet may not have a lot to do with my neurological issues, I find changing the vibration or frequency of my body does help. And we do this by what we eat. What we eat determines what our frequency or vibration of our body is. And so, yes, I've had a lot of problems, especially lately. I was supposed to have surgery on my lower back, called a hemilaminectomy and discectomy, where they take a piece of my lamina out, because the lamina is on the left and the right side of your vertebrae. And this, by taking a piece of the lamina out, it will stop my vertebrae from compressing the nerves. I have two nerves that are being compressed, which is causing my chronic pain. And folks, things have been so difficult for me, I cannot even afford to buy my medication to even treat this chronic pain that I have. That, just like I said, keeps getting worse and worse over, as I get older. I've been basically using Kratom as my primary pain reliever, but it's very expensive here, and so I am forced to, when I can afford it, go out and buy pharmaceuticals from go to a doctor, have pharmaceuticals prescribed to me, and then I have to take them if I want to function. And this is an awful way of living. I'm telling you this because I don't want to come across as a hypocrite. Because I am really against the doctors today. And I'm really against the pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry in general. But what do we do? So, yes, I've made several changes in my life, and diet is one of them. Now, I said I am not here to promote a vegan or a carnivore diet, but I find myself, the more I stick to a vegan diet, the better I feel. Now, I'm just telling you how I feel, folks. This is me. You know, go ahead and mock me if you want. It doesn't matter. I'm just explaining to you my experiences. Take it or leave it. But what I have found is basically staying on a plant-based diet raises my energy level and I would say makes me or helps me to become more in tune with myself spiritually. By being in tune with nature. This has, or being in tune with your innermost and with nature does have a great impact on how you will feel overall. And so, this is why I avoid meat. Now, I've been I hate using the word diets because most of them are just awful for you. I try to use the moderate approach. I tend to eat more raw fruits and vegetables than I do anything else. However, if my body craves a piece of fish or my body tells me that maybe a steak might do me some good, well, I'll usually listen to my body and follow through. So I am not a 100% vegan or vegetarian, but I do recognize that the vegan-vegetarian diet, at least for myself, is more beneficial. Because eating meat, at least for myself, folks, lowers my body vibration. And it also, I think, brings down my vibration of my soul. Eating meat means to first kill and then eat a corpse of other animals. So since, you know, you're destroying and eating creatures that are the same body level by vibration as we are, as mammals, well, that proves to creation that even if you meditate or even if you lecture others about spirituality and preach unity, which I do not, at least, I feel that man is on a higher conscious level than animals. And so, really, just because that's so, I don't believe that it's our right to eat them. I really don't. We must understand that a soul, and a soul's just the awareness, not the energy. I believe the spirit is the energy. Or maybe I have it backwards. I don't know. But to understand that a soul needs to use an energy instrument, all right, to be able to interact around with other energies in nature, we must be very conscious of what we put into ourselves. If this energy vibration we collect from these other animals is higher, well then, I believe our spiritual level would be higher, which is why I believe that eating plants and fruits is more beneficial for us. eating dead flesh, to me, well, that just brings my vibration down lower. And the argument between eating vegetables versus animals, well, you're killing the plant too. No, you're not. When you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you eat the fruit of the plant. You're not killing the plant. This is if you have the moral, you know, if the morality of this bothers you. Many people become vegetarian or vegans for different reasons. They do it because they love animals, or they do it for health reasons. Me, I do it for both of those reasons, but for the third reason. To try to raise my consciousness, to try to have a higher frequency, so that I'm able to be in tune with my inner self and with nature. Every time you eat a piece of food, you absorb that food's energy into your body, right? And the quality of that energy has a direct impact on the quality of your overall health and vibrational level. So if you eat junk food that has been processed with added chemicals, your body won't get much nutrition and your energy vibration level will decline. But if you eat healthy food that is natural and unprocessed, in the state that God, if you will, created it, well, then your body will receive the nutrients it needs and your energy vibration will rise. So eating a high vibration diet and drinking high vibration water will purify your body so that it works in harmony with your mind and spirit. Yes, that is what being in tune with nature is all about. That's it. The electrical currents or circuits, circuits in our brain, and really all the other parts of our body, they all rely on electrical currents. But the electrical circuits in our brains and in our heart will function better, promoting good health and allowing you to think more clearly if you're on a high vibration diet. And I've experienced this, folks. Back in 2013, when I reached, that was a very important time in my life because I had realized that I had gone to a different level of my spiritual journey, or I had reached another state of enlightenment. And this happened when I became a vegan outright for the first time. My whole being changed. My thinking process changed. My understanding of everything changed. And I really do credit that to my diet. And also in my experience, I've learned that when you eliminate meat, I believe, or I don't like the word believe, I know that you can improve your psychic abilities. Yeah, your psychic abilities. I, for one, can tell you that one particular psychic ability that I have had been awakened. And that psychic ability is my intuition. I, for some reason now, well, I know the reason. I think it's because of diet. I am able to listen to my inner self now. Listen for clues or for for signs to help fit the overall puzzle together that I'm trying to put together. Yes, if you have a quiet mind and if you are operating on a higher frequency, you will be able to interpret knowledge or wisdom in a completely different way. Again, this is evident because I'll give another example. When I came to South Africa in 2014, I was a year into being a vegan. Again, with the exception of maybe once every couple months, I'd eat a piece of fish or a steak, maybe. But this is when I really started to open up and write more, create more. It led me to ultimately being able to do radio. So it's very important, folks, that we understand this and that we are conscious of this and that we all find our own individual path or way that is best for us to reach this higher state of enlightenment or consciousness, if that is one of your goals. It is most definitely one of mine, if not the highest on my priority list. Now, I mentioned how eating has to do with raising your consciousness, or what you eat raises your consciousness or can lower your consciousness. And I came across an article here. Actually, it's a question, but it's kind of long. And I don't plan on reading the entire thing, but there are some interesting points in here I'd like to cover. Because they mention the word Kundalini in the article. If you don't know what Kundalini is, I'll go over that later in the show, but briefly for now, it is the practice of raising energy up your spine. And we have seven, what they call churches, if you will, or seven chakra centers. And when the energy hits each and every one of those chakra centers, more energy will raise up your spine and ultimately reach your crown chakra, and some are able to leave their bodies, which isn't the important part right now, okay? But the question was, does eating food affect the process of Kundalini or spiritual awakening? Diet seems a big part of a lot of our awakenings, and this is the question being asked, all right? And for the past 5 years, this guy has practiced a mostly raw vegan fruit-based diet, now mostly just doing mono meals of fruit. And it seems like there's always this energy in my body and spine, and it's always trying to push through the spine as it seems open, or it seems to open it up or break through knots in the spine. All right, I'm not going to read the whole question and the whole answer. It's actually quite long. But in the answer here, he states that Kundalini reminds him of being in labor, or I guess her in labor, sorry. There's a force. That force has its own intelligence and objective, and it's going in one direction only. And there's nothing you can do about it once it's initiated. And so, yes, this Kundalini is how, I guess you could use as a measure of how far you are along in your spiritual journey. I don't know what your goal is. My goal is to reach spiritual liberation. Some would call that Christos. Yes, William de Hewitt, the Christ, right? No, folks, that's not my ego proclaiming that. in the old Gnostic traditions, the pre-Christian Gnostic traditions, that was the whole point, was to reach Christos. And the story of Jesus has been so watered down and so mistranslated and purposefully, I may add. But it's supposed to be a playbook on how to reach Christos. And that ultimately is what I am going to attempt to be doing tonight, is to be continuing on and sharing with all of you my development in my own personal journey. I feel it's very important that we understand the straw man and the maritime admiralty law. Yes, we must understand that. But after you understand that, you're kind of stuck, because you're either forced back into the system or you're forced to starve to death and die out of the system, because there's not enough of us out yet where we could help one another. Oh, which brings me, you know, before I get into this, which is going to be, I said, was a playbook. I call it the alchemical playbook, or the great work, alchemy. Not very many people understand it, but before I get to that, I did wanted to touch on or wrap up with the food part. I have also noticed that the more I stick to fruit and vegetable-based diet, that... All right, folks, I think this is the first break. So I shall be back on the flip side.
Flu season's just around the corner. Aren't you sick and tired of being sick and tired all the time? Then get your flu shot and vaccinations at Steinblatt Bergstein Pharmaceuticals, Glim. And DeHewitt House of Radio will send you a free Oregon pine casket, handmade by Carpenter Jesus himself, and with no shipping costs.
Wow,
what a deal! Hurry, offer is good while supplies last and for a limited time only.
This commercial's a joke to make you think in an attempt to save Goyim lives.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Before the break, I was talking about how nutrition and diet had changed my life. Before I go into alchemy, otherwise known as the great work, I wanted to wrap up a little bit about the food and the diet, okay? Now, what I'm about to talk about next is extremely controversial. It is extremely mocked and ridiculed. And I'm not promoting it one way or another because I am not there yet. I am not able to practice what is known as living on prana or breatharianism. Living on prana means nourishing your body with prana. And if you don't know what prana is the life source of the universe, or of source, or of nature, if you will. All right? And when we live off of this life source, or this life energy, which is in everything, and it's all around us, we can absorb it through breath, but also through the skin. Now, those of us, or the very few of us, who live on prana are also called sungazers or inedia. It's just another word for breatharian. But it's not as simple as putting, lumping everyone into one category, all right? There's different variations in living on prana. Some will not take any water or food. And to my knowledge, there are only a few people on earth living this way. Some will not eat food, but they'll drink water or tea. Some will eat no solid foods, but drink only water and juices. Some will only drink water and juices with a light meal, mostly on social occasions. And finally, there's some who will only just live on water and juices once or twice a week with, a light meal. Now, folks, I am not suggesting that you stop eating. This is a process. You might be a meat eater now, and ultimately the next step would be to become a vegetarian and have a plant-based diet with animal products mixed in, maybe milk, dairy, Ultimately, the next step would be to cut out the milk and the dairy and to live only on vegetables and fruits, mostly cooked. And then after that, you go to the raw vegan diet. After that, this is when you could, if you train yourself or if you, I'm not exactly sure how becoming a breatharian is done because I am nowhere there. But I can see how it could be possible. Because I've experienced the more nutrition I put into my body, such as eating raw fruits and vegetables, I noticed the less I really need to eat. You see, our bodies always seem to be in survival mode. Every few hours, we get hungry again, or at least I used to when I was a younger man. And there's a reason for this. This reason is because our brains or our bodies go into survival mode, and our brains are telling our stomachs that we need energy or fuel. And this energy and fuel, folks, is often measured by calories, but I find this to be incorrect. This energy or fuel really are nutrients. And we are all lacking the proper nutrients and vitamins and by design. Because go into your supermarket and just look at all the processed foods. Look at all the dead flesh. Look at all the genetically modified organisms. We're getting fuck all for nutrition. And so the secret is, the more natural nutrition you get into your body, the less you need to eat. I really don't think we need to be shoveling spoonfuls of whatever into our bodies. The reason why we're hungry the next few hours is because we shoveled all that into our mouth and there was no nutrition in it. This is called survival mode. This is why we're hungry every few hours. So to me, it's not a stretch. Once you are living nicely or healthfully on that raw vegan diet, I do not see it impossible to become a breatharian. Again, which is just living off of prana, which is the life source. And isn't that interesting? This is what plants, for instance, fruit, they grow from the life source, from the sun. It doesn't seem like a stretch to me at all. And hopefully one day I will be able to get to that point. I really believe that it's possible, and I have it as a goal. If I ever reach that goal, I do not know. I practice an awful lot. I fast every day. Basically, I only eat one meal a day around midday. And this is when I've noticed when my organs are not so busy working, digesting food, this is when I notice my intuition kicking in more. Yes, the intuition, which provides knowledge and wisdom. Well, wisdom is just the practice of that knowledge, but I think you understand what I'm saying. Information gets to us intuitively. Some will say they hear a voice in their head, or some will say they just have these thoughts that they otherwise never would have thought of before, or the answer to something just comes to them. This, folks, has happened to me. I cannot tell you how many times. This information that has come to me through my intuition, folks, if it wasn't for that, I would not be able to write or to talk about a lot of the topics I talk about, because you can't prove a lot of the information that we're trying to prove, because the Jew has left it out intentionally. He has hidden it from us, which I, on an off topic here, I am pretty damn sure is the reason why they are spraying chemtrails, or the Zog fog, some call it. Because the sun, which is the life source, carries information via gamma rays. Gamma rays carry high amounts of higher intelligence. And what it's interesting that in these chemtrails, aluminum is the main metal sprayed, which aluminum, to my knowledge, if my information is correct, is the one metal that will block gamma rays. So there could be something to this. Why they don't want us to gain this knowledge? Maybe there was a lot of knowledge that came around the time of 2012, when all of this truth movement, so to speak, really picked up. Yes, I know the truth movement is controlled, folks, but there are some honest, truthful men and women out there who are seeking to get to the bottom of everything. I'm one of them. So, yes, I just wanted to mention the breatharian. Because, yeah, folks, to ingest food really is a requirement for most of us, if not all of us, to live. And a fact here I found. Food, when it comes to the Gnostic tradition, is assigned the value of hydrogen do, D-O, as in do, re, mi, fa, so, la, ti, da. Yes, hydrogen do 768. Do is a note, and do is the first note on the octave of seven notes. And the law of seven is the fundamental law of creation, which organizes everything that the law of three produces. This is the law of the octave. Okay? We have light, but that light is modified by the law of seven. And we have sound, but that sound is modified also by the law of seven, the law of the octave. And this is why we discuss, Mike Sledge and I have discussed the seven chakras and the seven bodies, the seven notes. There's seven colors in a rainbow, which the rainbow is just a representation of opening up all of your chakras, which leads to Christos or spiritual liberation. Now, I bring this up because it has some to do with food. When we eat food to sustain our physical body, we take food. It's assigned a relative value or density, all right? And that density is do 768. Now, the number 768 refers to the relative weight or density of that food or the substance in relation to prana. If prana is the simplest form of substance, which manifests as hydrogen, hydrogen has the value of 1. Then 768 is 768 times away in modification or in relative density or weight. So you could also put it another way. 768 could be described as the number of laws or modifying factors. In synthesis, we can say that hydrogen, do 768, is very complex. It's very dense. And that is why our body needs to digest the food. This is why we have a digestive system. And so I've given you here the two extremes, the breatharian, where he lives off of prana, which has a value of 1, which has zero, or if not zero, very little density compared to most food we eat, which is very dense, which is why we're not open, or which is why most of our intuitions are not open, which is why most of us are not in touch or in tune with nature, nor our inner selves. This show, I'm going to be, folks, I'm going to always remember this, always be building on top of what I said last, okay? Hell, I think I'm going to ultimately write another book. I've taken so many notes, and these chapters have written themselves. They started off as articles. And so this is, if I say something or talk about something, such as straw man and Admiralty Maritime Law, that, folks, is the first thing I think we need to understand. Then we need to understand our own selves and our diets and the impact it has. And after that, I believe the next step is the step of the initiate, the step of the initiation into alchemy. Al, A-L, means God. Okay? And Chem, C-H-E-M or K-H-E-M, is from Kimia. It's a Greek word, which means to fuse or cast a metal. Also, Chem is the ancient name of Egypt. And I find this word Chem to be very interesting because my deceased wife's family name, one of her family names was Chem. Very interesting to me. So, while most people think that alchemy is the turning of lead into gold, they could not be more wrong, folks. Several, I can't even count how many hucksters out there over the millennia have tried to actually turn lead into gold. But no one has been successful because it's not supposed to be done. Turning lead into gold represents, folks, it represents the process within us. Lead is often compared to the egos. Yes, egos. I add an S. Because the ego or the egos are not what you think they are. To me, the egos are habits that we pick up, and then we feed them. And ultimately, they become created entities that live within us or around us. And so we are always feeding these egos, such as being, I always use the examples, the obvious examples, like being an alcoholic or a drug addict. Or overeating, or being a compulsive shopper. You know, these are all habits that have turned into entities, and we need to feed these entities. So that is what ego is, or egos are, okay? And when these egos, which I think most of us have multiple ones, they actually encage your innermost or your spiritual essence. The bird in the birdcage is often used as a representation. The yellow Tweety bird is your innermost spirit, the gold, and the egos enslave it, encage it. And you never ever get the chance to actually live via your spirit, because you're too busy feeding the egos. I hope that makes sense. So ultimately, turning lead into gold is annihilating the egos, killing these egos, these entities that we created through habits, and setting your spirit free, which is the gold. That, folks, is the transmutation between or turning lead into gold. It has nothing to do with heating lead or trying to turn physical lead into gold. Because you see, folks, these egos, this lead weighs us down. It's very dense. And when you're dense, you really have no chance at spiritual enlightenment. In alchemy, it's symbolically stated that there are that five atomic ingredients exist with a unitive cement in order to acquire such fusion. This is these elements are. Or not elements, ingredients are seed, which represents the ens seminis, the masculine and the feminine creative energies. Honey, which wisely represents the Bartholin glands or greater vestibular glands. These are two glands located slightly below and on both sides of the vaginal opening in women. And they secrete mucus to provide lubrication, especially when the woman is sexually aroused. Wine is the same ens seminis transmuted or elevated to a higher scale of vibration by means of the alchemical transmutation, which is magisterially symbolized in the biblical narration of the transmutation of water into wine in the weddings of Cana of Galilee. And then there's bread. It's a clear reference to the solar bodies, the existential vehicles of the being, which is the outcome of the alchemical work. You see, we have these different bodies. We have the physical body, the causal body, the astral body, and the mental bodies. And most of us, if not all of us, because there's very few people out there who have liberated themselves spiritually, we all have what's called lunar bodies. And these lunar bodies are what the ego uses as a vehicle. So once we annihilate these egos and these lunar bodies, we must do the great work. We must create the solar bodies, which are eternal, which liberates us from this hell, this physical hell that we find ourselves in. And finally, the last ingredient is milk, which is a symbol of developed virtues, okay? So when you hear seed, honey, wine, bread, and milk, don't take those words literally, folks, okay? Yes, there are many elements in spiritual growth. And to understand what the elements in spiritual growth are, we need to understand what we mean by spiritual growth. Yes, there is a lot of misinformation about spirituality in the world today, in our modern culture, that causes us to have misconceptions and misunderstandings about things that unfortunately we take for granted as correct. But can gravely harm us and our spiritual growth. Now, to understand what spiritual growth means, we need to understand what is spirit. And the word spirit in English has been terribly abused, especially in this world we live in today. We use it for things ranging from the feeling of a certain kind of music or art to describe ghosts and phantoms. And we even refer to alcohol as spirits. So my definition I'll be using, at least for today, of spirit is very imprecise. And it's not founded in the ancient, accurate, specific knowledge regarding how to awaken consciousness. Here, if we look at what the Gnosis teaches about spirit, we can look at any of the ancient traditions and the etymologies of the words used for spirit, and they all agree. Spirit, mid-13th century, animating or vital principle in man and animals. from Latin spiritus, related to spirare, to breathe, to blow. That's what we're told. But the true meaning of spirit is animating principle. Yes, the true meaning of spirit is animating principle. That which animates us. Yes, the first half hour I tried telling you what the soul was. I really sometimes doubt myself and think that I have them backwards. I used to think that the soul was the animating principle and that not everybody had a spirit. I am 99.9% sure that only Aryan man has spirit or the spirit of the Aryan. So I just wanted to be sure to point this out. I could have it backwards. I really honestly, but for now, spirit is the animating principle. Although I really in my heart think that the spirit is more special. I think the soul is the animating, but I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be doubting myself on the air here like this. But for now, we're just going to go until I say otherwise, that spirit is the animating principle. So alchemy has everything to do with energy, matter, and consciousness. All things have this trinity, from the tiniest to the largest. And we ourselves are composed of these three components. Only by working with these three in conjunction with each other can we fulfill the purpose of spirituality. There are also three components that relate to the five basic elements that make up all manifested things. And they are Akash, which I believe is synonymous with the ether, air, fire, water, and earth. Yes, the five elements are sometimes simplified to just four: air, fire, water, and earth. Those four elements in spirituality do not refer merely to physical elements, okay? All right, folks, I'll be back after the break.
ADL and the University of California at Berkeley's D-Lab have been working to develop a new approach to tackle online hate using the latest methods. The goal of the Online Hate Index is to help tech platforms better understand the growing amount of hate on social media and to use that information to address the problem. By combining artificial intelligence and machine learning with social science, The Online Hate Index will ultimately uncover and identify trends and patterns in hate speech across different platforms. We've just completed our first phase of research, and we found that the machine learning model identified hate speech accurately between 78 and 85% of the time. In the next phase of our project, we will look at specific targeted populations in a more detailed manner. We'll examine content on multiple social media sites, and we'll identify strategies to deploy the model more broadly. While there's still a long way to go with artificial intelligence and machine learning-based solutions, we believe the Online Hate Index will help tech companies better understand the extent of hateful content on their platforms by creating community-based definitions of hate speech.
Welcome back to No Separation, No Peace, everybody. Thank you for listening to Revision Media and De Hewitt House of Radio. Before the break, I was talking about the five basic elements that are sometimes simplified to just four: air, fire, water, and earth. And the fifth is the Akash, or the ether, okay? But these four elements, not excluding the ether, in spirituality, they do not refer merely to physical elements, okay? They refer to spiritual and psychological elements as well. And these elements also are composed of those three primary factors: matter, energy, and consciousness. Now, the four elements are ultimately only manifestations of one element. They're particularizations or condensations. Some would say crystallizations of a more primordial raw matter or energy consciousness. Yes, in Hinduism, that fundamental source is called Prakriti. Or Prakriti, yes. In English terms, though, we would call it the Divine Mother. And in Latin, actually, it is called Mater. And this is where we get the word matter. And this word, in its construction of the root term or phrase ma, which is universal for the word mother. Yeah, this isn't a coincidence, folks. But the four elements, air, fire, water, and earth, they are particularizations or condensations, crystallizations, if you will, of the body of the mother nature. Our physical bodies are at a very gross or dense level of the condensation of these four elements that emerged into existence because of the physical mother or the matter. But that ability for that physical body to exist, even though it is composed of these four elements and they came through a physical mother, is only possible because of a cosmic mother. And our individual inner mother, well, she gave us these forces and energies to work with. Yes, that inner being I keep mentioning, that inner self. Well, self might not be the best word, but innermost. That primordial source, folks, can also be called Kundalini. But we have to understand the use of that word Kundalini, because in us, it is not active. In most of us, it's latent or asleep. And this is why Kundalini is depicted in ancient religions as a sleeping serpent. Yes, a force that is not yet activated, not yet awakened. But it is the very power or energy of the Divine Mother. And this is why she is always represented with a serpent. Now that serpent represents the power of nature as well. Her power. Her power that is in us is asleep. It hasn't been activated yet. And that power is the Ouroboros, the serpent eating its tail. It is the cyclical power of nature, which is at the root of everything. It can be found in all living things. But unfortunately, in us, that energy has been dispersed, misused, and has elaborated what in Greek symbolism is represented as the opposite of Athena. Yes, in the Greek mysteries, that opposite is called Medusa. Yes, Athena is also known as the Divine Mother, okay? And the opposite of the Divine Mother Athena is Medusa. Now, Medusa still begins with M or M-A-M-E. Medusa is a woman who fell from purity because of pride, vanity, and lust. Thus, that single serpent becomes many. And the same duality of the serpent force can be seen in other religions as well, such as related to Moses in the Book of Numbers. Now, because of the ego, the single serpent of the Divine Mother becomes multiplied, and it's symbolized as the serpents on her head, her hair. Yes, and we all know that Medusa's horrible power is to turn her victims into stone, into earth. Or, in other words, the power of Medusa is to crystallize the ego. The power of Medusa is the same power of the Divine Mother, but it's just inverted. She turns the heroes into stone, into earth. Just like the wife of Lot in the Bible, who looks back at the degeneration in her past. Sodom and Gomorrah, maybe. And it turns into a pillar of salt. Alchemically, folks, this is the same symbol. Salt is a mineral. It belongs to earth. Looking back to the past represents how the ego is attached. And all this represented through the crystallization of the ego. So the Divine Mother, as the root energy, folks, can be called Prakriti, okay? And another word for that is Akash. And the root vibration of prana, which was the life source of the breath Aryan. Now, this energy that vibrates is in all things. So it's in us, too. It is the core, or the heart fire in every atom within us. Now, physically and psychologically, we have that prana within us, and we have the power of the Divine Mother. The problem is that we have misused it, and it crystallized the egos. So we have turned that power into something negative. So how do we correct this? Well, we must actually transmute this energy. We must reduce the elements back to their essence and reform them into something pure. And this is what alchemy is. What this essentially means is that we take that very power of the Divine Mother and we harness it. And we pulverize everything that is within us in order to reform it. To create something new, something pure, something better. In other words, we withdraw the energy of the four elements in order to bring them back to their original source, which is Akash. Now, in the tradition of alchemy, that force is called quintessence, which means the fifth power, and it is the fifth element. It is the Kundalini. It is the energy of the Divine Mother. Now, in order to do the great work, otherwise known as alchemy, we need a laboratory. Without a laboratory, it's impossible to perform that type of work. We need a place within us which we can bring the needed elements, focus on them, pulverize them, purify them, and then extract the essence. Cast aside what's unneeded and unnecessary. And then we repeat the cycle. Over and over and over again. The four elements, through the process of heat and pressure, gradually with patience, becomes pure. This means that the power of the Divine Mother grows in us, it awakens, it emerges, and instead of being latent and static power, well, it becomes an active or kinetic power, something that moves, something that acts. So, alchemy is a science to access the power of the Divine Mother herself. And this knowledge, folks, is not generally given to the profane. It's not even really given to people who are just curious. So why am I sharing it? Well, I like to think that people who read my writings or listen to my radio shows have a good intent. Because what I speak of is not for everybody, folks. This power that we awaken within us can be easily misused. And when we misuse it, not only will you not ultimately liberate yourself spiritually, you can become a demon. Yeah, a demon. So, I can provide, and I will be providing. I'm just only getting started here, folks. I feel I have a very good understanding of the alchemical process. And unfortunately, it will be impossible for me to talk about everything. But in these show, in this show, and in future shows, I'm going to be touching and expanding on each particular practice that will help get you, or at least help got me, to the next phase of enlightenment, a step closer to liberating my spirit. For I don't even know how long this knowledge that I'm sharing tonight, or more specifically, will be sharing in the future, because like I said, I'm only just getting started here, trying to shape your mind so that you could at least be in the correct mindset when listening about alchemy, about real alchemy. Yes, this information has been hidden a lot of times in just plain sight. I have pictures or illustrations. I should have uploaded them and I should have had them ready so that I could share them in the chat room. Because if I'm able to explain these pictures and if you're able to see it, you might grasp it better. But I'll have to save that for another time. But yes, this information has been out there more readily accessible for people like myself who are interested in this. But you have to understand how to interpret it. You have to understand how to read it, how to take this knowledge and then practice it. Just having the knowledge itself is not going to help you liberate your spirit. You have to practice as well. And depending where you are in your evolution of your spirit, well, depending, it'll depend where you are, your understanding will be, is what I'm trying to say. Some of the things I am telling you might not register yet. They might not be useful yet. But hopefully you'll hold on to some of these unuseful, if they are just that at this time, unuseful. You'll hold on to these ideas or to this knowledge. Only the divine, folks, bestows the power of alchemy to an individual. No school, no book, no instructor can bestow that power. They may be able to open doors, but to actually become an alchemist is a power given only by God. And it can only be that way. So we need to forget what the media and what Hollywood and what certain authors have told us what alchemy is. We need to wipe that all from the slate. Alchemy means, or we, the process is to transmute the lead of a personality into the gold of spirit. Yes, it is to change the lead, the egos, into gold. When you pulverize or annihilate the egos, all that's left is the gold, the spirit. Your spirit has become free. It's no longer in the birdcage. Hell, some say the spirit resides in the heart. Well, the heart is in our rib cages. But probably the most popular statement that people make about alchemy is that it supposedly was just a farcical belief of a bunch of clowns running around Europe, claiming to have the ability to transform crude metals into gold, right? Well, without question, folks, there were many such clowns. There were people who dressed themselves up to look fantastic, to play the part of the alchemist. They were tricksters. They were hucksters. They were probably Jews. And they were only trying to get attention and or money. Shekels. Boy, they. And without a doubt, there's many such people out there today. The truth is that the concept of transmuting lead into gold was merely a symbol of the actual work of alchemy, which was to transform the base metals, the earth, into pure metals. Now, symbolically speaking, that earth is in us. Yes, the earth represents you and I, folks. Our metal, our earth, is very impure. And it's become very corrupted, very weak, very susceptible to illnesses and dangers. And I believe we have the Jew to thank for this, because he has helped us to really lead us to corruption. Yeah, we ultimately have the final say, but the Jew has led us into corruption. To transmute the lead into gold, folks, it really refers to the transforming of the psyche, the mind, the heart, into spiritual gold, a vessel through which the Divine Mother can operate without any obstacle. This is the laboratory, folks, your body. Because alchemy is only possible in the laboratory. Again, which is our body. Over the centuries, those who have been curious about alchemy, who have wanted to make gold so they could become famous and rich, well, they've made themselves many laboratories and tried to reproduce the teachings of the alchemists physically. But they do it by crafting all sorts of fantastic vessels and objects and ovens. Oy vey. And limbics, and many type of tools that they've gathered together. And as a result, we now have our modern science of chemistry. Yes, what we have now today as chemistry came from alchemy. Because the words are even similar, you know. But the difference between chemistry and alchemy is that chemistry has lost the first two letters, A-L. And at the very beginning of the show, I told you what A-L meant. It means God. To fuse with God. To bind, to merge, to become one. Modern chemistry renounces divinity. Modern chemistry has created some useful things, but no chemist is an alchemist. All right, folks, I'll catch you on the flip side.
Are you a corporation with enemies? Not to worry. We have a production company that is in with all the latest trends and fashions to address all of your corporate needs. Do you have a peer that is vying for the same job you are vying for in the ladder of success? Not to worry. The Central Intelligence Agency is here for you. We have TSA, law enforcement, sheriffs, NSA, etc. all within our control under our authority since the 1947 National Security Act. Are you having troubles with a surety that is continuously fighting for his children in court and will not let them go solely to their mother? We can drum up human agents, signet services, all related products at your service by which to easily criminalize this character. If you are a corporation and involved in child, female, and or male trafficking, you need a ringer on your side, contact us today. We're the CIA, turning your dreams into reality. Disclaimer, solely a creation of Congress through congressional actions, the CIA does not take any accountability whatsoever for its actions or that of its actors and or agents.
right. Welcome back for the last half hour of today's No Separation, No Peace show.
No Separation, No Peace show.
I will be taking calls this last half hour if you would like to talk to me. This show has gone really quickly, and I've not gotten through hardly anything that I thought I would. So I think this is going to be a continuing series. Today, I'm basically just laying the groundwork or setting the table, if you will, to get your minds right so that you understand the real meaning of alchemy. The intent behind it, and how it has been so misunderstood. It's been done on purpose, because, as I said, this information is not for everybody. So if you would like to speak to me, please call in, and I will take your call. I would like to get through one last concept first. I started before the break talking about the laboratory, and that alchemy is not possible without a laboratory, and that laboratory is your body. So we have the Al, or the El, or the Al, meaning God. And then we have Chemia, which means to fuse or cast a metal. So the meaning of alchemy is to fuse with God, to make our metal, our body, our heart, our minds, one with the divine. This, folks, is the real meaning of alchemy. And what about the laboratory? Well, of course, nowadays, we take this concept of a laboratory for granted. And we immediately think of these people, these nerds in these white lab coats wearing glasses, running around in their lab, right? And they usually have these pocket protectors with a bunch of pens stuck in their pocket. And we think they're very smart. Yep, today we treat scientists like we treated priests. As if somehow they're better than us. Holier than us. As if they know more than the rest of us. But really, these so-called scientists, well, they did not invent science of the laboratory. In fact, the whole concept of science and the laboratory come from the tradition of alchemy. And surprisingly, there were a lot of historical scientists who were alchemists. Most of these historical scientists I find to be repulsive, because while they knew the truth, they told us lies. Or at least the enemy Jew used them to tell the lies, to mislead us. But if you read the quotes of people, for example, like Newton. Yes, Isaac Newton. He said, quote, "Because the way of the mercurial principle may be impregnated, has been thought fit to be concealed by others that have know it." Wait, let me read this again here. "Because the way by the mercurial principle may be impregnated, has been thought fit to be concealed by others that have know it, and therefore may possibly be an inlet to something more noble that is not to be communicated without immense damage to the world, if there be any verity in Hermetic writers. There are other things besides the transmutation of metals which none but they understand. So basically what Newton is telling us here is that he knows about alchemy. He knows about the transmutation of the spirit or the physical energy into spiritual energy. And the word laboratory actually means something different from what we think it means, folks. It does come from Latin, laboratorum. But the first part, labor, means to exert with hardship, pain, fatigue. It's a work of labor, something difficult, something that is not easy. Without question, that applies to the man or woman who is trying to perform this great work. It's a very tiring work, folks. It requires great exertion, much hardship, and it causes a lot of pain because the annihilation of these egos, which we must first do, is very painful. I used the example of the ego as being an alcoholic or a drug addict. Imagine the pain behind curing yourself of alcohol or drugs or overeating. Yes, great pain is caused when you set out to destroy these egos. So before you can ever start feeling good, you must destroy the impure. And this is very painful. Now, the second part of laboratory or laboratorium is oratorium, which means a place of prayer. So the laboratorium is a real laboratory, and it's a place of prayer and work. Now, when I say the word prayer, I don't mean it in the Christian sense where you ask God for help or, you know, whatever these Christian sayings out there ask for a better job or for a nicer house. No, no, no. That's not prayer, folks. Without prayer and labor, there can be no alchemy. Let's see here. Oh, I lost Rosemary. Rosemary, if you're listening, please do call in. I hope I didn't discourage you. I just really had a lot to get through, and I planned on taking your call at the end. So if you are listening, please do call in. That goes for anybody else out there listening. If you'd like to call in, the number is... I should have this number memorized, and I do not. 855-492-6049. That's 855-492-6049. If you have any questions about what I've talked about thus far, please do call in. I know there has to be a lot of you out there with questions because this material I'm going over is very in-depth. And as I said, we must change the way we perceive alchemy before we can understand the real behind it. Oh, in the future, I will be going over symbols. Yes, the symbols of alchemy that so many within organized corporate religion do not understand, folks. Okay? And one of these symbols is the cross. The cross represents the crossing of man and woman. The vertical pole represents the active principle, the male, while the horizontal pole represents the passive principle or receptive principle, the woman. This is the deep meaning behind it. And while I had intended on going further to explain this tonight, I don't think I'll be able to because, well, I don't think I have covered enough, but to jump to the very end, to give you an idea of a beginning point, which I've been talking about all night, to the end or final stages of alchemy, which, again, I'm not going to go out of order, but just to give you an idea, it has everything to do with the cross. I said the vertical pole represents the male and the horizontal pole represents the female. This is an alchemical symbol with an alchemical meaning. Jesus on the cross is not what you think it really means. For example, in order to become a Christos, you must die. Your egos must die. And you must form a union with your wife or your female partner. And this union is a sexual union. Which is why the pole, vertical pole represents the man and the horizontal represents the female. Yes, I know the cross is also a cube or a box. A Jesus in the box, if you will. But that is what is meant when Jesus dies on the cross. That's the final stage of alchemy. It's the union of the male and the female. So all of these monks who have remained celibate, well, they'll never reach Christos or spiritual liberation because they've been told to practice celibacy. But the final stage or step of alchemy, which again, I'm not going to get into it right now. I'm just trying to give you an idea of the beginning and the end. There's a whole lot in the middle that I shall be discussing next show. But yes, it is, the final stage is a sexual union. And this is where a lot of the demons, such as like Crowley and a lot of these other famous figures who talk about sex magic, they've perverted, absolutely perverted the real meaning behind sex. They've turned into black magicians, ultimately. I was talking about the cross and how the cross represents the crossing of man and women. Okay? The vertical pole represents the active principle, the male, while the horizontal pole represents the passive principle or the receptive principle, the woman. And the cross also represents the four elements: air, fire, water, and earth. Okay? I brought that up because I wanted to give my listeners an idea of where alchemy starts, which is what I've been talking about the entire night, and where it ends. Now, I'm not going to skip everything in the middle, but since I didn't receive any phone calls, I was waiting to see if anybody wanted to talk or call in. I thought I would give you an idea of what the end stages of alchemy are. And it represents the cross. It represents the sexual union between the male and the female. And this has been perverted severely by demons like Crowley and other sex magic perverts, mostly Jews. But man, I really look forward to that part once I get through everything else here in the next coming shows, because what we think or know about sex is actually the opposite of what is really meant behind the act. And I think it's going to surprise a lot of you, because it surprised the hell out of me. So, again, I gave out the number, but I'm not sure if anybody heard. If you'd like to talk, ask me a question. The number is 855-492-6049. That's 855-492-6049. Please do consider calling in if you have any questions, because I know I've covered a lot of information. And I know some of the information may even be angering. Yeah, it's not nice when you have your world turned upside down on you. It's very uncomfortable. Just as the word laboratory, or the first part of it, is labor. And labor means to exert with hardship, pain, and fatigue. So alchemy is performed in the laboratory. And it is a work of labor. It's something difficult. It's something that is not easy. And I'll repeat myself again in case I was cut off. The second part of laboratorium, or laboratory, is oratorium, which means a place of prayer. No, not the same type of prayer that the ignoramus Christ insanes do, where they ask God for a better job, for a better house. They ask God to help me, please. No, folks, that's not what is meant by prayer. Prayer, I would liken it more to meditation. You see, alchemy, in every moment, is an every moment practice. I mentioned the egos and how the egos basically run our lives and encage our inner spiritual selves. They run amok. And so, if you want to annihilate them, which we have to do, if you want to reach spiritual liberation or become the alchemist or the Christ, you have to eliminate these egos. And you can only do this by observing them. Yes, by looking within yourself, by observing these egos, once you're able to observe them, you'll gradually learn how to catch them or to stop them. And you do this by being conscious of your inner self. I hope this makes sense. I think I will stop here for tonight. Again, I did not get as far as I thought I would, but at least now the table is set, and hopefully from here on out, you'll start to think of alchemy a little differently than what the popular culture has led us to believe it is. And now you'll have a week to get your mind in the right, you'll have time to get yourself in the right state of mind when it comes to alchemy. You'll understand a little better what it is I'm really saying. Because these words, these symbols, all have inner meanings. Secret meanings, if you will. This is what the mystery schools were all about. So, thank you all for listening. And I shall catch you next week. Cheers.